Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You would never say this in a regular season game, in the fourth inning of a 1-0 deficit, but the Cubs have to score here. You've got to put something on the board right here.
Here's one in the left center. At the wall, and it's gone. Tie game.
I wasn't going out there trying to hit a homer or any of that. It was have a good at bat, and you know, it's nice that it went over the fence.
Left side, here comes Rizzo. No play at the plate, everybody's safe. 2-1, Cubs on top.
We're writing our own history, we're making history. Why not stop?
High fly ball to left. That sends Santana back, tagging his Zobrist. Another run, it's 3-1.
Yeah, I've never been looking forward to wanting to play the seventh game of a World Series in my life, you know. We get to go over there with two rested starting pitchers. From an entertainment perspective, if you're a baseball fan or looking to become a baseball fan, it was wonderful tonight. Outstanding.
Not dead yet.
Hey, the Hawks won. Oh, that's probably not the big story this morning. No. The
Bears are playing tonight.
That's definitely not the big story today.
Dancing with the Stars is on tonight.
That's not the big story either. Oh. Hawks win. Pretty entertaining baseball game. And Aroldis Chapman, I don't know the guy. I don't think I'd want to be caught in an elevator with him. But he can pitch.
Yes, he can.
And eight outs. The funny thing is making it sound like coal mining. He has never gone this far.
Right. It's like he's a big,
someone
strong
get him
guy.
Water.
Right. I know.
And the anticipation when he's coming in, they're like, well, this is unprecedented territory. For him, this
How's
has
he
never
breathing.
Been done.
Are we going to have to resuscitate?
Well, you don't want to be the Cleveland Indians, I don't think. You don't want to be the Cleveland Indians. You didn't want the Cubs to come back. You wanted to wrap it up.
I don't think so. But how funny, Friday going into this, we all said, hey, Monday we could have World Series. You know, this could be it. They could sweep. They could do it at Wrigley.
Oh, Friday, Saturday was ugly.
Oh, and last night, we're just praying to stay alive, which we did.
How about Smoltz saying last night that the Cubs have to score here, even though it's only the fourth inning, and Bryant, next pitch.
Smoltz is really good.
He is very good.
He's really good, surprisingly good. Anyway, 6-12, play the music for the man, will you? It's time for Paul Conrad, America's Heartthrob. Most Mondays we start this way, and since next Tuesday is Election Day, Paul and I will be kicked out of the country.
Right.
I figure we might as well live it up now, you know?
Yeah. Let it all hang out.
So what are you going to be for Halloween?
You know, I never do anything, right?
Well, you dress up like crazy on the thing with the TV bit. The
right.
Bit with the TV thing.
So I pace myself. Leave
Don't
it all on the floor here at work.
Don't you pick one of those and take it home to the mail order bride?
Trust me.
Costume night at the house?
Yeah. Well, I try to mix it up, you know, bring home everything I can.
I don't know. You look so good in all of them, I couldn't decide.
I know.
It's a burden you bear.
Yeah. Well, that's my life. It is.
We have a show costume here. Everybody here is going to dress up. And thanks for asking, by the way.
Yeah.
And we have everyone here is going to dress up like the Flintstones.
Really?
Yeah, I'm Fred.
You're Fred. Yeah. I remember seeing Dave Bennett in Little Red Riding Hood a couple years back.
Yeah, come on, Paul. Really? You had to bring that up
it
now.
It was special.
I didn't even think about that. Dave should have been Wilma. Because I'm telling you, there's not much to this Wilma costume.
So you're doing this today?
That's today. Yeah.
What time?
Well, we'll probably do a photo op around 7:20.
Ooh. Good.
Yeah, and then there's a noon party here at the plant.
Which we're not keeping our
costumes
on.
We are not keeping our costumes
really,
on.
Why not?
What? I'm the only one that wore mine.
First of all,
morning.
They're made of, like, felt.
Well, we're not keeping the costume on, but you're going to have to put them on at noon.
Yeah.
Let me just say also, I don't want
to explain to you why.
I want to see a street picture, not just an office picture.
Yeah.
A street picture.
I want you out on the bridge and then maybe up on the sky deck. Get out.
That's a good idea. Get out around town.
Yeah.
I am the only true player here, Paul. I have my costume on, and I'm planning on wearing it all morning.
There
I am
you go.
Betty Rubble.
You can tell. She's channeling Betty Rubble.
Yeah, like she was there.
So, the kids, all still trick-or-treaters?
I got a couple that are asking me, hey, at what point am I supposed to stop doing this? Because I just want the candy.
30, 35?
Yeah, I didn't know what the right answer is.
I think, yeah, listen, when they stop dressing up and they just show up and they do this, yeah, you got any candy?
Right.
That's when it's over.
So probably 25.
That's when it's over.
All right, I'll tell them to keep going then.
Yeah. Did you know the White Eagle neighborhood in Naperville was named one of the top 20 neighborhoods in America for trick-or-treating?
Really?
Yeah.
So that's where I got to drive out
to. That's
where
you got to drive. You got to drive the kids out there.
Ooh, big candy bars?
I don't know that it's just the big candy. I think it's the whole Halloween experience, you know, with the slutty mom costumes and everything.
Oh, yeah, those are the best.
Do you guys decorate the house? I'm just curious.
No.
No. You don't carve pumpkins? I carve pumpkins over the weekend.
No, you know, honestly, I haven't carved pumpkins in years.
Because the squirrels eat them.
I mean, I have a 29 and a 25-year-old. It'd be kind of weird if I made them sit around the table and carve pumpkins at this point.
Yeah, but isn't it fun just to kind of carve, get your friends together?
I haven't seen Ross in months.
Except last week.
All right, so before we run out of time, favorite Halloween candy, least favorite all time?
I got to go with the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Number one, no doubt.
All-time favorite, and then the apple.
The apple. I love an apple.
It sucks as a Halloween gift.
You get,
they're
not
at the
great.
House all the time and no one wants them.
How about a nice old banana?
Yeah.
Just a soft banana to throw in your bag.
That is a good one.
The bag of pennies. Did you get the bag of pennies when you were a kid?
I also, you know, the religious tracts. Those are good to get also.
What do you mean? You mean like a CD?
No.
Like a religious mixtape?
No, they're not music. It's like a little booklet.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. I had a Jehovah's Witness neighbor, and the Jehovah's Witness neighbor wanted us to be preached to.
Yeah, kids really want those.
Hey, we just want the candy. Right. We're just here for candy.
They're sneaking it in.
And did you ever get pencils and pens?
No.
Yeah, we got pencils.
Ooh.
Yeah, we got pencils. That was really not appreciated.
You just want candy, and you want the bigger things, right? Like, I already saw the Snickers fun size or bite size or whatever. Those blow. Like, it's hardly an eighth of a bite. Give, you know, if you can, let's be a little bit more outgoing.
I spent $100,000 on Halloween candy yesterday.
Let me also just, in all full disclosure, I've not had one trick-or-treater in my house in the 21 years I've been there. So.
Well, that's because you're behind security doors.
Right.
Paul buys 19 bags of candy knowing none of it will be given away, so he can just eat it at home.
Put it under my bed.
They pull up to the compound and ring the buzzer.
Right.
Is Mr. Conrad home?
Mr. Doorman, could Mr. Conrad come down with a Snickers?
Go away.
Tell them not to bother me. All right, buddy. Well, happy Halloween.
All right. To you as well. All my love.
And you. Goodbye. Oh, boy. Today is Jimmy DeCastro's last day. Who's Jimmy DeCastro? How dare you? Jimmy DeCastro is the president and general manager of this place until, what, maybe 5?
Until noon.
5 p.m. and then he's out?
Actually, the party's at noon, so I think he's done 12:01. 11:59.
But a lot about him later as well. And if you think that's self-serving, we'll get your own show. 6:22, a lawsuit over this weekend. This is Mark Ronson and Mr. Uptown Funk, Bruno Mars. Are getting sued. I don't know the details. I lost interest halfway through the headline, but I'll bring it up to Dean later. Meanwhile, we've got more developments in the election that never ends. A week from tomorrow, everybody gets to vote unless you've already voted. I'm going to wait. Has anyone on the show voted yet?
No.
I have not.
Mary Sandberg voted? Sandberg is the only one on the show that has voted. I don't want to vote early. Why did you vote early? Turn your microphone.
I vote by mail. I can't be bothered with the going to the place and seeing people.
I didn't know you could vote by mail.
Well, those of us in good standing can.
What does that
How
mean?
Can you, I mean, I know the college.
Well, you're not military. You're not out of state. How did you vote by mail?
It used to be that's what it. Not, but now I think they just want the votes or something. So they, when you send you your little reminder, they say you can go online.
Did you commit Trump voter fraud?
No, I did not. But I did take that picture and send it to you because it was weird to see Trump's name really on the ballot.
Right.
Andrea, didn't you vote?
I did
early?
Not. I usually go on Election Day. I like the whole, the whole experience.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought you were voting early because you're going to be gone, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to be in New York, so I might vote early. That's a good...
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Because you can't vote in New York.
That's right.
Unless you've got some Greek people
here. Unless you're involved in the voter
unless
fraud,
unless I'm voting in the rigging. Did you see the woman who was arrested over the weekend? She voted. She was trying to vote twice.
For Trump.
Because she said the election's rigged.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, people. But I voted. I mailed it in already, so...
All right.
It's rigged.
Yeah, thank you, Donald.
My vote counts.
The problems that now exist, again, have nothing to do with whether or not either one of these two chuckleheads could do the job, as the two worst candidates in American history continue to grind the nation to a halt. Hillary Clinton on Friday, James Comey, the FBI director, steps up and says, you can't make it up. Anthony, I can't keep my pants on Wiener. And the continuing investigation into his emails and his sexting incident with a teenager apparently revealed that a machine that Huma Abedin had access to, family laptop, whatever the case may be.
That's Hillary's chief of staff.
Right, her number one go-to chick. Woman, she says, is like another daughter to me. Separated from the pervert. Mm-hmm. By the way, for the sake of discussion, instead of calling him Anthony Weiner, the plaintiff, we'll just call him the pervert. I think it cuts to the chase. So, separated from the pervert, but he had the laptop that she used, or she had the laptop that he used, or he, in some twisted way, to continue to destroy his life and hers, somehow wanted to implicate her and tied their emails together. Whatever the case may be, we don't know. The fact is, James Comey took an unprecedented step when he stepped up and said, this is an investigation which is now going to go to another level. In fact, it's not closed. The New York field office was handling it. It went to Washington. Comey, apparently because he took so much heat for speaking up before, did not want to take heat for not speaking up now. In other words, Hillary Clinton gets elected a week from Tuesday. A week after that, you find out this investigation was ongoing, and they start screaming at Comey, why didn't you say you were looking into the emails 2 weeks ago? Well, he said it. And now the Clinton side, who said, what a good guy for standing up and saying Hillary Clinton's not guilty of anything, is now saying, oh, my God, I can't believe he's doing this.
Right. 2 weeks before the election. Less than 2 weeks.
So Hillary Clinton's people now are dead set against James Comey. A month ago, they were fully for him. Donald Trump's people a month ago were fully against James Comey. Now they think he's an American hero.
Yeah. And you know what? And all the misinformation that's out there, too. Newsweek did a really nice, concise piece about this yesterday, too, online. For Trump using this all weekend, which he did, saying Hillary has sent more emails. These are not Hillary's emails. They did not come from her private server. The device on which the emails were found did not belong to Hillary Clinton. So yeah. You have to get those. If you want to start discussing it, you got to get the facts out there.
And there's 650,000 emails in play. You're going to hear that number a lot. I just want you to stop for a second. Just take a breath and do the math. If these were her emails, she was Secretary of State for 4 years. 4 years is what? 1,460 days. Mm-hmm. 1,460 days, 650,000 emails is about 500 emails a day on a 12-hour day that she would have to have processed for those all to be her emails. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you know anybody that handles 500 emails a day?
I delete maybe 500 a day.
I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I think maybe they're sitting in a spam file somewhere. I don't think any of us get 500 emails a day. In other words, all the State Department emails would have to be going to Huma and the pervert's house.
Right.
I don't think it works that way.
Imagine if they counted all the spam.
And the people I feel worse for are the worst for are the FBI guys that have to sit there and go through Anthony Weiner's email. Can you imagine what's in there?
I don't want to imagine what's in there.
So the hypocrites are the Democrats. The hypocrites are the Republicans. The hypocrites are all of them. You know, nothing changed over the weekend, and nothing has changed. The bottom line is, who can you possibly turn the presidency over to? The guy who likes to grab the P word and has no respect for women, who you couldn't possibly even imagine being locked in an elevator for 14, 15 seconds with your wife or daughter, or the woman who couldn't tell the truth if her life depended on it. They're both dishonest. They're both bad people. One is dangerous. One isn't. You decide. 628. Already got a headache. We're 20 minutes into the show. Back after this on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Good news for you, Andre Darlis. No shots today.
I've got a stomach pain.
No injections today.
Fungus on my toe, and I need
not that I didn't enjoy seeing Dr. Most last week. Really
Dr. Kevin Most joins us now. And a brief thank you. Doc is one of the most generous guys there is. And on Saturday, it was nice enough to have me tag along with a great foursome at one of the world's best golf courses at Chicago Golf Club, and we had a great time, didn't we?
We really did. That was just a lot of fun. It was a great group, and Had some laughs, saw some great golf, and had a couple of really good caddies as well.
I wonder who finished first in that. Who was the four of us? Wasn't it the young man from Titleist?
Yes. Let's see. Kent Sands won, and he beat the head pro from Butterfield, Alex Mendez. So,
and I think you were third. So who that would make me fourth, wouldn't it? Of the four,
Well, you know, really, it's only the top three that matter. So.
I did my usual ADD, 48-38. There you go. There's two nines for you. So, but man, what a great golf course. What a great time. So thank you again for that.
You got it. You're welcome. That was fun.
Your brother, one of the other Most family members, they're like the Osmonds. There's 50 or 60 of them. And I think Merrill Most or Alan Most, I forget which Most got a hold of us, but said, hey, we need to adjust laryngitis by way of Cubs fans last night. A lot of screaming going on.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. He texted me late last night. David texted me and said, hey, I was at the game. You know, if you're going to try to help anybody in Chicago, why don't you talk about how to treat laryngitis? Because there's 45,000 people leaving Wrigley right now with laryngitis.
And I would say, too, in bars and restaurants, I literally couldn't talk on Friday. And I wasn't screaming and yelling. I could barely talk to the person sitting across from me.
Do you remember when you used to go into smoke-filled bars?
Oh, God.
Can you imagine that now? Yeah. And now you smell smoke from a mile away. You think there's a fire. But laryngitis goes away. It's a stress thing, isn't it?
It is. You know, the vocal cords are essentially muscles, and if you use them improperly or you abuse them for a short period of time, they're going to get inflamed, and you need to just rest them. So lots of fluids. Rest your voice. Probably the biggest thing with people with laryngitis, don't whisper. People think they're whispering that's going to make it easier or make it better. It actually makes it worse. It's
really
harder to whisper. Yeah, it's harder to whisper. More effort in the muscles of your vocal cords to whisper than it is to talk normally.
I didn't know that.
But
never knew
that. Lots of fluids, yeah. Think about it. If you could, you could probably do curls for, well, you know, who knows.
I can do seven.
Anything happen.
Yeah. Seven, eight curls, easy.
But you try doing a very fine movement, and it's going to make it, you're going to be much more tired quickly.
Interesting.
Quicker. So don't whisper, talk normally, but rest your voice today and drink lots of fluids.
One of the things I want to discuss with you is a new concussion study or two that's out, because here we are in the middle of high school sports season, the NFL season. Yeah, even though the Bears are not playing, I don't know if you're aware of that. But before we get to that, and we'll do that after the break, there's another study that came out last week which has nothing to do with this discussion, and that's on SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. It's something we heard about a lot for a period of time, and then we don't hear about that much anymore. So what's new, and what do we need to know?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, we really haven't had a lot of changes in how we're going to take care of infants since 1992, since the back to bed, you know, making sure that when you put your child in the crib that they're on their back. What just came out, or it's actually going to be published just later this week, is that there's now a change now that the recommendation is that not only should infants sleep on their back, but they should also sleep in the same room as their parents for at least the first 6 months, if not the first year of their birth, of their life.
And the idea being that if the child has an issue, you can hear it? What's the...
Correct.
Okay.
That's exactly it. You know, we feel that the chance of catching somebody who is in respiratory distress is much better if you're in the room there with them, because it's been shown over and over that the monitoring systems that we have are terrible and shouldn't be used. I mean, it's kind of say, oh, get them a baby monitor. American Academy of Pediatrics has said, no, don't do that anymore. Put the child in the room with you. If you hear them having respiratory distress, you are going to be the one that's going to save them.
Okay, I get that, but I don't want to totally dismiss the baby monitor thing either, because the baby monitor thing that you're talking about, the reason that's not the primary idea is because you take it for granted, right? If you're not in the room, you know, you
exactly.
might look at it, you might not look at it, but still it serves a purpose.
Oh, it does serve a purpose. It the Academy is going to take the extreme to try to push as many people as they can to what they think could potentially decrease the number of SIDS by 50%.
So it's a big deal, obviously. And then what is the body-to-body contact piece of that study that I saw?
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, when a child is first born, placing the child skin-to-skin on top of the mother as quickly as possible after the delivery is actually great for the child. It makes that infant more relaxed. It makes them breathe better. And they're really not even sure why that works and why that happens. But it has been shown that those individuals and individuals who are breastfed have a much lower incidence of SIDS. So whether we're going to say, you know, gosh, the baby's delivered, let the mom hold the baby, you know, skin to skin. And it's like, wow, that's kind of unusual. but it's something that's been proven over and over in breastfeeding as well, and putting children on their back, and now, you know, having them sleep in their room. What we're trying to do is decrease that incidence of SIDS as much as we can, because the vast majority of these kids who die of SIDS are healthy children.
So literal physical bonding is absolutely crucial.
Yes. Yes. How about it?
Man, well, that's great. That's no bad news there, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. If we have any whiny staff questions, we can go to those in a little bit. Dave Schwann's in for Steve Grzanich this week. And Schwani,
good morning.
Nice to see you, buddy.
Yeah.
And Dr. Most is available for any whiny staff questions. So when we come back, Schwani, if you've got any aches and pains or problems that you'd like to relieve yourself
of. How much
of,
time do we have?
Yes. The only thing you can't do is check you for a hernia over the phone. So. 6:52 on Friday, we found out that Bennett Wagnite, Benedict Cumberbatch, who works on the opening bell and works on the show as well, had gotten mugged on the way to work. And Dr. Kevin Most rejoins us, Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. And Doc, he got hit in the face pretty hard.
Wow.
And he joins us now because yesterday, I told Bennett when I called yesterday, I said, listen, Bennett, I am going to nag you about this. But now I'm bringing in professional help to nag you as well. How are your headache? How's your headache today? I thought I turned this on.
Want free Blackhawks tickets? There's two chances for you on two.
Okay, that's a mistake. Hold on. Stand by.
How's your headache, Steve?
Damn, I just got worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they don't let me fly the plane. Bennett, how's your headache?
The headaches are all right today. This is probably the least dense of a headache that I've had all weekend. But they've been constant headaches throughout the entire day, just a dull pain in my head since pretty much Friday afternoon. So I kind of had the thought that I would kind of let a couple days go by, say, all right, let's kind of gauge how it actually is. I really wouldn't take any Tylenol or Advil or any pain meds until I would go to bed, just to kind of gauge how things were going and progressing along throughout the days. And I said, today, you know, if it's still a pretty solid, dense headache throughout the day, then I would go see a doctor. So, Doc.
So, Bennett, struck in the face, or did you hit your head when you fell?
The first hit was a sucker punch to the temple. The other one was to the jaw, and then I fell on the ground, and they grazed the back of my head 3 times.
Okay. And if your headaches, if you said your headaches from 0 to 10, 10's the worst headache in your life, 0 is no pain at all, where was it Friday? Where was it Saturday? Where was it Sunday? Where is it today?
Friday was probably 8. Saturday, probably right around 8 there. Sunday yesterday, it probably dropped down to a 6. And right now, I'd say it's at a 4 or 5. But things tend to, you know, escalate throughout the day.
Well, is that some comment on the show? His headache gets worse as the show goes on?
Well, yeah, but that's I've learned to grow used to that.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say we take that into consideration. And that's without any Advil or Tylenol throughout the day?
Yes, until like bedtime, on which I take some to go to sleep.
Okay. I mean, those are all, that's very promising, you know, that the headache is not getting worse, that it's getting better. You remember the incident, obviously, you remember the two blows, you remember mm-hmm. what happened. Sometimes people with concussions will have amnesia of the event itself. As long as you're continuing to do that, what I would have said on Friday is someone should be with you pretty much all day. You shouldn't be driving a car, things along those lines, but Friday's passed. But as long as now as the headache's getting better and you're not any more confused and you're not having any other mental issues as far as where you're at, what's going on, I'd say that you're going to do pretty good.
So he doesn't need to go to a doctor now?
No, I'd say as long as his headache is improving, the doctor's going to say, hey, all we're going to do is watch it, monitor it, look for this. You know, signs of people have headaches and then vomit or the headache's getting worse. Those are the things we're concerned about. But for him, he's already passed the 24 to 48 hour period that we would worry about. I wish we'd had this conversation on Friday, because the first 24 hours after a head injury is probably the most important. It's going to tell us which way this head injury is going.
All right. And Bennett, no word on the creeps that jumped you, right?
Got in touch with the detective, so they will be requesting the CTA video footage and see where we can go from there.
And again, Bennett did exactly the right thing, Doc. We mentioned this on Friday, but he had three guys jump him. He didn't try to say, you know, he didn't fight them off or try to get my phone. You know, he gave up his phone and got rid of him. That's the move, people. That's the move.
Yeah, you can always replace a phone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So this leads us into concussions before we go to whiny staff questions. Oh, you have a question on Bennett?
Well, yeah, I do. Doc, most Bennett is opposed to taking Advil in general. When he had back pain from his backpack, he wouldn't take it. Is there any advantage to not taking pain medication if your head is hurting?
No. At this point, actually, it's very good for you because right now you're dealing with inflammation. If the inflammation comes down, the headache goes away, you feel better, you respond more quickly to things, you act more appropriately. So Advil right now is a great idea, especially this far in. So I would definitely take
it. Yeah, so don't wait till bedtime. Take it now.
Correct. It's not going to do anything. Yep.
All right. Nicely done.
Thanks, Doc.
Sure.
All right, so the concussion study, before we run out of time, is what?
Yeah, you know, and nothing against organized sports, because Mary Sandberg made a good point. She goes, we always talk about organized sports and concussions, but we have to realize that there's a lot of other concussions. And, you know, team sports are important. They teach us discipline, teamwork. They build a lot of friendships. But the only way studies of concussions are going to happen is if they're with organized sports or with organized people. So what's interesting is there's a study came out of Sweden where they looked at over 100,000 Swedish males who had injuries to their brain, had a concussion, documented concussion. The control group had to be, if you had a concussion in your family, you had to have someone who hadn't had one. And that's the control group that they compared these to. And what they found is that the people who had a single diagnosed concussion, more likely to be receiving medical disability as an adult, significantly more had sought out mental health care, and probably the most important, were less likely to have graduated from high school or college just from one single concussion when compared to a sibling who did not have a concussion.
So you could literally have damage years and years later that you wouldn't even necessarily associate with it.
Absolutely. And that's what we're looking at now is we're talking about the acute injury and the importance of identifying that and making sure that we don't get someone back into a game to have a second concussion on top of the concussion they have. But what we're also finding now is let's start looking at these individuals long term. And that's the second study that they're doing at Wake Forest, where they took 25 very young football players between the ages of 8 and 13. And they did an advanced MRI on these kids prior to the season starting. And they did one at the end. And what they found is that there were changes in their brain that they noted on the MRI for those that didn't have a concussion but had significant hits to the head during the season. Now, they didn't say anything about cognitive. They didn't say anything about any changes, but they noticed these MRI changes. Now, they'll be following these kids again to see if any of those changes occurred or anything has happened.
So the bottom line here is to remember that the next play doesn't matter. The rest of your kid or your high school player's life matters. If you think they got their bell rung, they did. It's not even a discussion.
Absolutely. You know what this is? This is more about awareness. This is more about what should we be looking for. And you're going to start to see more long-term studies. They're going to show, okay, what really happens if you've had two or three concussions? What has happened if you've had five concussions? Mm. What if you haven't? So, you know, awareness is probably the biggest thing because without that, we're not grasping which kids have concussions and what's happening in the future.
That's why medical research matters and why we spend the money on it.
Yep.
All right, Doc. Nice job by you. And thanks to you and Alex and Kent and everybody again for Saturday. And you'll keep an eye medically on the Cubs over the next 24 to 48.
Yeah, and thanks to Justin and Sam for caddying for us too. Two great kids.
Yeah, they're great kids. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. All right, I'll talk to you later. 7 o'clock. That's Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. Back with the news in a moment on 720 WGN.
Never say this in a regular season game, in the fourth inning of a 1-0 deficit, but the Cubs have to score here. You've got to put something on the board right here.
Hits one in the left center, at the wall, and he's gone! Tie game!
I wasn't going out there trying to hit a homer or any of that. It was have a good at bat, and you know, it's nice that it went over the fence.
Left side, here comes Rizzo. No play at the plate, everybody's safe. 2-1. Cubs on top.
We're writing our own history. We're making history. Why not stop?
High fly ball to left. That sends Santana back, tagging his Zobrist. Another run. It's 3-1.
Yeah, I've never been looking forward to wanting to play the seventh game of a World Series in my life, you know. We get to go over there with two rested starting pitchers. From an entertainment perspective, if you're a baseball fan or looking to become a baseball fan, it was wonderful tonight. Outstanding.
Seven 13. How appropriate. It's Halloween and they're not dead yet. Kevin Paul was there last night live at Wrigley. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, Steve. How are you? Well, happy Halloween.
And happy Halloween to you. What are you wearing?
Just some gray sweatpants with a black hoodie. I'm just going with the full comfort look this Halloween.
So you're going as you?
I'm going as me, yes. Figure that'd be frightening enough for most people.
Well, good call. You and I texted over the weekend a couple times, and it looked like it was really going to be a miserable weekend, and then they pull it out of the fire last night. But let's not kid ourselves. This is not exactly an offensive juggernaut, 5 runs in 3 games.
No, and I think Cubs fans would be breathing a little bit easier today if it wasn't offensive outbursts last night. But, again, that game could have went either way. I mean, the Indians left some guys on base, but to the Cubs' credit, Chapman, Lester continue to come up with big pitches anytime the Indians were threatening or had a runner in scoring position. So that can't be overlooked. But the Joe Maddon, the move he did with Chapman to leave him out there for as long as he did, I mean, this is why good managers matter in baseball. And for Maddon to stick with that after being, I think it's fair to say he was criticized at points bringing Chapman in the eighth inning earlier in the postseason, and Chapman struggled a little bit, but for him to go out there, Chapman has an at-bat. He still leaves him out there. It's kind of funny to see Chapman in the batter's box, to be honest. But for him to have the guts to leave him out there, I thought that was huge. And that's what you're supposed to be able to do with your best reliever, is put him in at the most crucial spots. And Joe Maddon sensed a rally. The Indians had a runner in scoring position when Chapman came in. And he finished the job. He did what he was supposed to. I mean, this is what the Cubs gave up all his prospects for. This is what you're supposed to be able to do, is trust and rely on your best reliever. And they did that. And he came through, and the Cubs came up with just enough hits and just enough big pitches to hold on to this one.
Kevin, I love the fact that they did that with Chapman. They said that it was the first time he had batted all season. Which was,
he looked pretty good. I
he
mean,
looked he, great.
He's a big dude. He's linebacker size. Yeah. Kevin, have you stood right next to him?
He's just large. He's tall. He's big, and he just has a big presence to him. Even when you see him walk out on the field from the stands, he just is a large, large man. Tall, big, yeah.
But he's a linebacker. You know, he struck out, but he looked like, you know, he looks like an athlete. He looks like he could handle a bat if he had time to get it done. And the thing that surprised me about it is he was laughing about it before he went up. Mm-hmm. Because you think about it, it was the worst case scenario. It's the automatic out that you have to keep in the game when you have a chance to score a cushion run.
Right.
Yeah, and that's something you almost never see in the National League, is a relief pitcher coming up to bat. But Chapman thought it was worth it. Or excuse me, Maddon thought it was worth it to leave him out there. And they needed to protect the lead. That's why he saw Jason Hayward go up there and hit late, because Maddon wanted to keep him in there. That's why he didn't see Kyle Schwarber. If the Cubs were trailing, you probably would have saw Schwarber late in a pinch hitting role. But Maddon wanted his best defense out there, and it all paid off. The defense last night was phenomenal from the Cubs. The plays Rizzo made, the play Hayward made down the right field line when he sort of climbed the wall, and then the wind brought the ball back in, and he reached back and caught it.
That was awesome.
Defensively, I thought that, yeah, it really was. Defensively, I thought they were great last night.
It was a great defensive team.
Well, Jason Hayward had a pretty good weekend.
Oh, he sure did.
Yeah.
He came out of it. Bryant came out of it. And, Kevin, I love the fact when he moved Russell up in the lineup, I thought, oh, but then they were saying, you know, it's a confidence thing. It's a whole mental thing. And he broke out of it. Now what do you do with Baez, who's still 0-4, what, 12?
And swinging at everything.
Yeah.
He's swinging in his sleep.
Too much. What do you do with him?
He's got 3 hits this series after really tearing up the majority of the postseason, the first couple series. But Joe Maddon was asked about it before yesterday's game, and with John Lester pitching, I mean, at this point, defense is obviously at a premium, as it always is, but you got to have your best night out there defensively. That's why you've seen Hayward in the lineup I think Baez is going to stay. He's going to stay at second base. Mm-hmm. I mean, even that when Ross got, I believe it was Lindor stealing second.
Oh, it's amazing, Tad.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good throw from Ross, but a better tag from Baez. Once again, I mean, he was sliding. He grabbed the ball and was able to tag out the runner. You saw a similar play happen where it was almost an exact replica of that same play, and Jason Kipnis wasn't able to make it. It wasn't a bad play from Kipnis, but it was just a perfect way to illustrate how good Baez is with that, with his reflex. But I don't think they're going to take him out of the lineup. I mean, he still came up with that big bunt yesterday, found a way to get on base. That actually put Ross in position for that sacrifice fly. I think
he's got to stop swinging at everything. Yeah. He's got to stop swinging at everything.
Yeah, I think that's the concern. He looks like the Javi Baez of old when he first came up to the bigs, when he was over-aggressive. He's leaning at the plate. He's swinging at junk. I mean, if they just throw him breaking balls the rest of the series, I don't know if he'll get a hit. But, again, his defense is too valuable.
And the other thing, too, you talk about lucky. And this is the one thing as good as Tito is.
Yeah.
Marshall Tito. The manager of the Cleveland Indians, who, by the way, ordered $45 worth of ice cream apparently Saturday night at 3:30 in the morning.
How about that?
Yeah, that made me laugh.
He said to make it a little bit healthy, he topped it with berries.
Yeah, good
he
call.
Went with chocolate ice cream with chocolate syrup and a little bit of berries.
Well, I thought it was ridiculous, but then I thought, well, they're probably staying, you know, at the Peninsula or the Four Seasons. $45 worth of ice cream is one scoop.
Right.
But what I was going to say about this guy is as smart as he is as a manager, I still think got very lucky last night, because with Lester not throwing to first base, I still have no idea why every guy isn't running. And I mean fat guys in Cleveland jerseys that aren't even on the team ought to be running. Yeah. And they really, you know, they got a couple of stolen bases off him, but they could have run a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. And even with Chapman on the mound, when Davis was at second base and there was one out, I believe that was the eighth inning when Davis got stranded. He made it to third with two outs, though. I don't know why he didn't steal with one out. That would have gave the Indians two chances just to really put the ball in play and score the tying run. But, yeah, the whole John Lester holding runners on, I mean, they only stole one off of Lester. And then they Ross was able to get Lindor stealing at second on the throw to Baez. So, yeah, there was some crazy leadoffs. And I think that played a little bit of a role into Madden with the early – with the early hook on Lester after, what was it, 90 pitches or so after six innings. And Matt had talked about that after the game. He said he was really sort of struggling those last few outs, and he looked like he started to get a little bit rattled with the Indians kind of messing with him on the base pass. But it was time to turn it over the bullpen, and it all paid off. It really did.
Barney, do you have any questions?
Who, me?
Yeah. Aren't you Barney Rubble?
He kind of looks like Sid Vicious.
Nice wig.
Yeah, you are Barney, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Great hair going on.
Am I married to him?
We're putting together the Halloween costumes. And by the way, Kev, there's no hope that the Fred Flintstone wig will fit my head. More on that to come. No. I know that's a shock. Dave, do you have a question for Kevin Paul live from Wrigley? He hasn't gone home.
I didn't hear all of what was covered just now because I was getting into makeup.
I'll let you know if you step on it.
I look at the way they played defensive. To me, the biggest difference last night was they caught the ball. You know, they played pretty much error-free baseball. And I don't know if you touched on this. The two plays, one that Rizzo made on the ball that caromed out of Ross's mitt, and then the play that Hayward made. I mean, that's a foul ball, but still, you know.
And even a play that may be overlooked because of those two highlight reel plays was Rizzo, and Chapman didn't cover first on this, but Davis put one down the line. That could have been a double. Rizzo holding that to a single was huge that inning, because Davis gets on a leadoff double to get him over, and then, you know, they have a couple chances of getting in. Instead, he's at first, and I believe he steals second that inning. And doesn't get to third until there's two outs, and then Chapman gets out of it. That was a huge play from Rizzo, and it was a great play. I mean, the ball was smoked down the first base line. He dives. Chapman doesn't get over, which was a huge mistake. But that, I think that kind of went overlooked after those other plays that were made. But, I touched on it a little bit. The defense last night was outstanding.
Yeah, Zobrist, too, on that ball that towards the bullpen that he had to go up on the mound to catch.
It popped out a little bit.
You got to make those plays if you're going to get back in it.
All right, so they go to Cleveland tomorrow night. Who's pitching?
It'll be Josh Tomlin against Jake Arrieta.
Yeah. Ooh.
And both of them pretty good in their last starts. Arrieta took his no-hitter into the sixth.
And we get Schwarber back in the lineup.
Yeah.
Dude, which is huge for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can never have too much offense, and I know they're going to be jacked to get him back. And I'm sure Schwarber's itching to get out. He hasn't had an at-bat the past two games, so I'm sure he's dying to get back out there with his teammates. But
it's a must-win for Cleveland. This is
they don't want to go to game seven.
No, there's nothing for the Cubs to lose. You're down. You got to win both. Cleveland loses tomorrow night. It goes to a game seven. And Arrieta was great last time. He could be great again now. Arrieta with any – look, you don't want to be the Cleveland Indians. You wanted to wrap it up last night?
You did.
And if I say look one more time, I'll qualify as a Lupinella impersonator.
you might. There was a stat I mentioned in the last sportscast that when you have a guy, a well-rested pitcher, as Arrieta will be, as Kyle Hendricks would be if they get to Game 7, against a guy going on 3 days rest since 1995 when they brought in the wild card, the team with the – starter who's well rested is 37-18 against the guy who's got 3 days rest. Wow. So the odds are in the Cubs' favor.
When was the last time a team down 3-1 won the World Series?
So 1985, the Kansas 85. City Royals. Last time a team did it by winning 6-7 on the road was the 79 We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates.
Against the Orioles?
Bill Medlock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kev, any last thoughts from you?
It's a resilient Cubs team. I think this one's definitely going to go seven. As a baseball fan, I hope it does because it's already been an entertaining series, and I think it's only going to get better.
Well, and again, since the Bears and the Browns are no longer playing NFL football, this is something that both cities can focus on. So
it is, and it's a distraction from some other things going on. So I think it's. I hope it goes seven. That's what I'm pulling for.
Will they do the World Series parade before Trump deports me? Do we know that yet?
I can try to clarify that for you, Steven, let you know.
Yeah. I think we would because, we'd have to do it next weekend.
Well, the mayor likes you, and so I'm sure he wants you around for the parade.
Yeah. And prior to that, after that.
I saw the mayor at Wrigley the other night.
Oh, yeah? Did you say hi?
Hanging out. Yeah. I did, and he turned around and walked away and avoided me.
Yeah, he's not.
now that I'm not with the Steve Cochran show, he doesn't care about me at all. Yeah. He's moved on from me.
That's the only thing Rokon hasn't stolen so far as the mayor. all right. Thanks, Kev. Nice work by you again.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
7:25. The costumes are getting more ridiculous. You got to see what Mike Jacobson is wearing on his head. As we go forward.
What is that, a beanie? Like a beret?
I don't know what it is. It's awful.
You're Bam Bam, aren't you?
It's a Bam.
I guess. Yeah. I feel like a stripper with this thing on.
I got a couple of singles here.
On that note, let's get to traffic.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision.
And folks, I got a better word for it, Danny. How about, could it be possible this kid takes scared the death pill?
Yes. Yes, it is. You go to WJANradio.com now and you click on the watch button and you'll be able to see the Flintstone family gathered together for this Halloween. Dave Ennett showing off the guns in his Barney Rubble outfit. I have a Fred Flintstone wig on, which I believe is now attacking me in some form.
Kind of looks that way.
Yes.
Why is it sticking out like in all ends? Nice bangs.
Fred had a bad hair night.
Yeah, I'll say.
Here we are, Barney.
Yabba dabba doo. And that's Betty Rubble. She and Barney are here. Wilma's getting dressed.
Wilma's in makeup.
And Pebbles and Bam Bam will join us. We'll have a photo op here in a second. I may be allergic to this wig. I'm starting to break out.
Well, you're not used to the...
Okay, I'm not used to hair. That's exactly right.
We're really going to wear these to the Halloween party at noon.
Oh, listen.
You bet.
It's not up to me.
Dave, why is your hair yellow? Really yellow.
Not my call. Dan Hampton is standing by because the Bears are actually still in the National Football League and will play tonight. Good morning, Hall of Famer.
Hey, good morning. And I'll be attending the game tonight as Colonel Sanders.
Be a hot look for you. Before we get to the Bears, weird day in the National Football League yesterday. Couple of ties, and I hate ties. Couple of ties, a couple of rules changes that I still think need to be addressed. But then sneaky teams that maybe, if you're not paying much attention to the NFL yet, even though we're halfway into the season, the Oakland Raiders are really strong. The Kansas City Chiefs have won 14 out of their last 16. The NFC Central, with the Packers losing yesterday, Detroit's a mess. The Vikings have a couple of issues that have popped up. It just is so gettable that it looks like this Bears season could even be more disappointing when you get to the end and you go, all we had to do was go 9-7.
You know, that is amazing that you really, were able to bring that up, Steve, because that's what I kept thinking yesterday. If we don't blow the game against Jacksonville, if we just take care of business against the Houston Texans and this could have been the all-time what if season for the Bears. And congratulations to the Cubs, and I'm tickled to death that we're still alive and going in it. But good teams find ways to win, and you have to do that. And unfortunately, this team does not seem to know how to find ways to win. We find ways to give the game away. So that is a pretty interesting take on what happened yesterday. Because everybody goes, Detroit won three games straight after us. Well, we almost gave that one away. So here we are. Playing maybe the best team in the division tonight. But guess what? The Vikings, they're gettable. The Philadelphia Eagles took them apart at the seams a week ago. So this is a game that on paper, everybody goes, well, the Bears will lose. No, we've got Jay Cutler coming back. We're getting a little bit healthier on defense. This is a game, don't be shocked if the Bears can, put some good plays together and be in this game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and again, that type of balance, that type of get it done is not what we've seen so far. But the Bears winning tonight, God, I sound like I'm drunk. The Bears winning tonight could start a positive roll towards something. And just as I said that, and just as Hamp was talking, I looked at my left, and on one of the monitors is a graphic that popped up on Channel 9 that said Bears hire outside consultant. Let me go live to Dave Ennett. What is that about?
There was a story over the weekend that the Bears had brought in a consultant to evaluate the organization and to look. And it's sort of hard to read whether that's a sign of impatience with the way things have gone in the first 2 years of this regime, or whether it's just kind of a healthy look at where you are and where you fit in.
I don't know what you have. The Halas family can spend their money any way they want, but there is no more overstaffed situation than the 2016 National Football League franchises. You've got special coaches for just about every circumstance, from who gets snacks at lunch to every facet of the game. You got general managers and assistant GMs. You got all levels of management. I don't think an outside consultancy answer, but I don't want to poo-poo it if it is.
They may even have Halloween costume coaches. Who knows? We, all I can tell you is, I was alerted to this on Saturday night, and my first reaction is, okay, a lot of times you get what you deserve, and when you're 1-6, John Fox deserves to be evaluated. And I'm glad they're not waiting till it's 1-10 or 1-15 or whatever it may, wind up being. But first and foremost, John Fox was paid a lot of money to be a competent leader. And we are not any better off than we were 2 years ago when he was brought in. So I almost applaud the McKeskey family for saying, hey, this isn't good enough. And we've talked about this on the postgame show, where we are the popes of postgame, and we cover more than just what happened on the field. The overarching point is the Blackhawks have won 3 Stanley Cups in the last 10 years. They are a force. They are a viable option for fans in Chicago. Now we have the Cubs. The McKeskeys don't want to go into the night quietly, and I'm happy to say They're saying, hey, something is not working out, and exactly what is it that we need to correct? So that in itself, to me, is a good thing. But when you have a head coach that you know, almost in a disrespecting type manner, you know, rejects the quarterback from being, you know, reissued as the starter, then you have to start evaluating pretty much everything, because when you start letting little petty personality type tiffs get in the way of what's best for the team, then okay, what else is being overlooked here? So like I said when I first found out about it, I'm kind of like shaking my head saying, okay, 1-6, this is what you get. And there's a lot of things that could have been done to change this, but the way John Fox entered into the season, the way he's coached, the way the team has played, this is where we're at.
We'll take a quick break, come back more with Hamp in a moment. The situation tonight for you guys is what? When are you on?
Immediately after the game till midnight. And like I said, this is going to – it's a very, very important game, but an exciting game in a lot of ways.
They've also got a little 7 o'clock pregame deal.
Oh, they do.
Situation, yes.
So they got a situation before and a situation after.
Situation from 7 to 7:30.
So we've got a couple of situations.
Yeah, a couple of situations tonight.
All right, good. I like those situations. I wonder how many dangerous chemicals this wig is made of.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
I think it's radioactive.
Starting to feel like the wig is attacking me.
Very itchy.
Yeah.
We're going to do a photo op here in a few minutes, and you can go to WGNradio.com and see how ridiculous we look with our Flintstone costumes on. Dan Hampton rejoins us. Hamp, I am a Flintstones expert of renown, you know, worldwide, really.
In how all the rubble that you leave in your way.
Yeah, that's part of it. But were you a Flintstones man when you were growing up? Were you a fan?
Sure, who wasn't?
Yeah. And do you agree with me, Joe Rockhead was underrated as an actor?
No, it had to be politics to keep him from winning something.
Yeah, Joe Rockhead at the Water Buffalo Lodge. And Mr. Slate was nothing to sneeze at either. I thought he was a decent boss. Hey, today is Jimmy DiCastro's last official day, even though he'll always be a part of this joint. But Jimmy DiCastro and Todd Manley are the guys that insisted you come back and bring Kaz and OB with you. So we owe him thanks for that as well.
Oh, well, I wish Jimmy the best. As you know, he's been quite the quarterback for us the last few years. And you're exactly right. The station is so much for the better. And trust me, there's nobody being brought in as an outside auditor to check out what he's done. He's done a great job.
All right, back to the Bears tonight. Dave Ennett.
All right, so Hamp, last we saw the Bears, it was at Lambeau Field, and there weren't all that many bright spots, but there was maybe a sign from Leonard Floyd in that game, the Bears' first-round pick. So how do they make Sam Bradford uncomfortable tonight and make sure that the Vikings don't have a big night offensively at Soldier Field?
Okay, and obviously, like I said, there's some opportunity here in this football game for the Bears to hopefully find ways to start being productive. And when you look at the Vikings, they're pretty good on defense. When you do not get after the quarterback Sam Bradford and just let him throw it, he can make plays and he can find ways to get the offense in gear and move them. So. Go back and see what the Vikings had to deal with the last game they played. That was at the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles with the wide nine defense sacked him 6 times. They really caused him an awful lot of trouble. And it was basically because the outside rush men, where Leonard Floyd will fit into this little equation. They're playing against backup offensive tackles. The Minnesota have, you know, not only did they lose a quarterback and their running back at the beginning of the season, now in game 3 and game 5, they've lost their 2 offensive tackles. And they're playing against backups, and quite honestly, we should dominate them. Not only Leonard Floyd, but Willie Young, Pernell McPhee is now back in the fold. So those are the three guys that I think we could say, hey, going into this game, you can win this game for us. You could, you know, force, fumbles. You could force bad passes. You could strip the quarterback of the football, get us some turnovers. We have not been disruptive enough. Well, tonight's a perfect chance for these kids to get after it. And you're right. Leonard Floyd had two sacks. One was a strip for a fumble in the end zone up in Lambeau. Those are, you know, we always say, hey, if it's going to be a good dog, it'll bite when it's a pup. Well, he bit a couple of times, and that's great. But he needs to beat people one-on-one. Both of those sacks came off of line stunts. Once you start beating people one-on-one, then everything else really starts to pay off.
What's the game plan with Cutler back on offense?
Well, as always, you try to, keep the chains moving. Minnesota's got a defense that's got 7 first-round picks. I think 5 or 6 will actually play tonight. They're first in the league, so you don't want to play into their hands by getting behind and turning them loose on your quarterback. So, hey, Jay Cutler, we need to be able to do some things that, you know, quite honestly, Dow Loggins didn't allow him to do in the opener and the first half of the Philadelphia Eagle game. Think about Brian Hoyer when he was at his most effective this year in games 3, 4, 5. He was being able to get out of the pocket, to boot, to do some tight end drags back across, some naked boots, some play action, all those things. Keep it in the game plan, but more importantly, Alshon Jeffrey is a different player with Jay Cutler. He is a guy that can make a lot of big plays down the field. He's kind of went dormant, you know, with Brian Hoyer. Hopefully, Alshon is very excited about getting his man Jay Cutler back.
All right, buddy. All the best. Go Cubs. Go Blackhawks. And good advice from you.
Prediction.
Go whole town and go Flintstones.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than when I should. Kiss me good.
8:14, live from Channel 9, it's Dean Richards as I sit here in half of my Fred Flintstone costume.
Well, thank you for that visual image.
Yeah. Oh, don't act like you didn't enjoy it, please.
I'll never be able to unsee that.
The Fred Flintstone, what would you call this? Is this a tunic? What's a tunic? Is it a tunic? What's a wrap that you would wear?
Toga?
Toga. Toga.
It's like a house dress. That's what you have.
It kind of has a muumuu quality.
A little muumuu thing.
A little bit. Like a pashmina. Yeah. A really
house
long
dress.
Yeah. Does this Fred Flintstone felt house dress make my ass look fat? Is that what I'm supposed to be asking?
Spotted? Is it like Fred Flintstone?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's orange with the black spots.
I'm going to have to go to the WGNradio.com to see this.
Well, I took off the wig that was attacking my head, so now I look like Billy Joel in Fred Flintstone's costume.
That's not good. That's not good. Wigs are really uncomfortable, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, remember that wig thing that you and Conrad did that you didn't invite me to? Remember that one?
Believe me, you did not want to be part of that lice fest.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, probably. Probably did me a huge favor. All right, let's run through a few things here. Bob Dylan has apparently been found.
Apparently, they did locate him after 2 weeks since they announced that he was winning the Nobel Prize for Literature, and the Nobel Committee tried to contact him to tell him, even though it's been all over the news, they had no luck for 2 weeks getting a response from Bob Dylan. Finally, over the weekend, he did contact the committee. He said that he was shocked and he was honored. And he hopes that he can attend
the ceremony.
I'm shocked. I'm honored. I may attend the event. He's not sure if he's going to attend the ceremony to accept the award. And again, I keep repeating this over and over. Bob, there's a $900,000 prize that goes with this.
I wonder what he's worth. Do you think he's saved his money?
I do. I think he's been wise with his money.
And he's from the 60s. And, you know, people from the 60s, by law, weren't driven by money. I don't know if you know that or not.
Probably just eats granola.
Right.
And hasn't swallowed it in 30 years.
I know I had a lot of hits, but you take the money. I'm not interested. All these years I've had asthma and nobody knows. Nobody understands. This is why I talk like this. Where's my inhaler? Remember that hit, Where's My Inhaler?
My inhaler.
Oh, well, congratulations to Bob Dylan and his $900,000.
Nice. That's nice. He did acknowledge that he knows that he won. He's just not sure if he's going to show up.
Well, he's got a lot going on. Speaking of music, the greatest song of all time, Uptown Funk.
Yes.
We got another lawsuit here?
We do. You play the Uptown Funk song quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, please.
Big and brassy, and you know, everybody knows that.
It combines all the greatest things in the world. You got a little James Brown, you got a little Prince, you got a little Bruno Mars, you got old school, you got new school, it's all in there.
This is all there. It's now the subject of a copyright infringement lawsuit by...
Gotta kiff myself, I'm so pretty.
An R&B group named Collage says that they did the song back in 1983, and this Uptown Funk is super, super similar. If only there was a way we could hear that 1983 song to see if we also think that it sounds like Uptown Funk.
Is this really Collage?
This is the group Collage.
There's some similarities.
Ching, ching.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. Why now? It's literally 2 years after the song came out. Did Collage forget they recorded it?
I don't know. I don't know what took so long, but I know that they've got some pretty good lawyers on this.
Now, the lyrics obviously aren't the same, but no. It sounds like Bruno Mars may have been... inspired by the rhythm,
the
bass line, the funk. Okay, I'm done now.
What the funk? What? the lawyers, this is what the lawyers say. Many of the main instrumental attributes and themes of Uptown Funk are deliberately and clearly copied from Young Girls, rendering the compositions almost indistinguishable.
Well, that's not true.
If played over each other.
Yeah, that's not true. That part's not true. However, they do have a case.
If a lawyer said it, it might be true. So,
if I'm Bruno Mars, I go, listen, your group's called Collage. Here's $8. Go away.
I'm sure that that's, you know, they saw the success of these other copyright infringement lawsuits that have taken place. And to answer your question, why so long since filing the lawsuit? Probably because these other copyright infringement lawsuits, most of which have been successful, and people have gotten a nice chunk of money. What's Collage been doing lately? Who even knew that there was a group named Collage before today?
I don't know what to say other than good luck, Collage, a sentence I never thought I'd ever say. All right, we come back a lot from last night's Cubs games, including Lady Gaga tweeting about the anthem. We'll talk about that. By the way, have you heard any of her new album, the Dive Bar album?
I've heard a couple of songs.
So good.
Yeah, she's great. It debuted at number one.
And the Saturday Night Live songs that she did, the two cuts from the album, both great. So I love Lady Gaga.
Fans of hers, and she is clearly still a fan of Chicago, very supportive in her tweets about the Cubs, and especially about one of the national anthem singers from over the weekend.
We'll tell you about that coming up. And also, Dean has a few words to say about Jimmy DeCastro that he's never said to his face, and he's about to. That sounded really bad, didn't it? See what I did there?
I got a couple of words for you, Pally, on your last day.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
8:25 now. Dean rejoins us from Channel 9. Dean, the question came up this weekend. Do the celebrities at the game get in free? Now,
no.
The answer is no. They are given an opportunity in some cases to buy tickets that some cases would be the Bill Murray seats. And who else was there?
The Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn. But they are buying those seats, or in the case of a couple of Fox folks that are in the stands, Fox is buying them for them. The reason being, if you're the Chicago Cubs, or you're the Chicago Blackhawks, or you're whomever, and you got a full building, you don't need to give away seats to celebrities.
It's all revenue, baby.
It's all revenue, definitely. And you know, but the you know the Bill Murrays, the Vince Vaughns, they've you know longtime fans. The John Cusacks, you know longtime fans of the Cubs. So Cusack may actually have season tickets himself. But
Cusack's a fan of both sides. Remember when he called here looking for White Sox tickets in 2005?
Did he really?
Yeah, he called us. He called us in 2005 looking for White Sox World Series tickets.
He called here in, I think in 98 when the Cubs were playing the Braves and looking for Cubs tickets like in Atlanta.
Yeah, no, he called me looking for White Sox tickets.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that doesn't mean he's not a Cub fan. You can be a fan of both sides.
He's a Cub.
And he's you know, whooping it up.
He definitely is, but they do not hand out those tickets for nothing.
Yeah, and nor should they.
I just looked on StubHub a few minutes ago.
Yeah,
just for yucks.
Yeah,
in Cleveland, good seats, $10,000. Good seats, standing room only, $1,000,
and still cheaper than they would have been here. Can you imagine the cost of seats last night if the Cubs had won Friday and Saturday night, and therefore had been an elimination game?
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
how about that?
Oh my gosh!
I'm advocating for a best of nine so they can come back here and win it.
That would be nice. We know that we've won the best of seven, but we'd like to play one more at home.
Right.
Winner take all.
Rule change. All right, what was Lady Gaga saying about the anthem?
She responded on Saturday night after John Vincent.
He's great.
Great Chicago singer.
Works a lot at Ditka's.
At Ditka's, exactly right. And I think it was through Ditka's that Joe Madden got a taste of John Vincent, and he's done the national anthem there a couple of times. He's the one, like, sort of famous for that last note. He did a 23-second sustained note not too long ago. So he sings the national anthem. Lady Gaga sends out a tweet saying that's the way the national anthem should be sung, that she was breathless with the whole thing.
Wow, how cool is that?
I had John on my show yesterday morning. And he was just, you know, completely blindsided, so appreciative and so happy that it got the attention of Lady Gaga. And I was happy to hear Gaga's watching the game. And, you know, she said go Cubs, despite the fact that she's no longer in and out of Chicago all the time because of her boyfriend, no longer with her boyfriend on Chicago Fire. She's a Cubs fan.
Yeah, well, that's great, right? And she's watching the games.
Yeah.
When is her dive bar tour coming here, do we know?
We have not gotten a date on that yet.
Okay, am I opening for her again?
Anxiously awaiting. Yes, she would like you to come and not do stand-up comedy. She would like you to do some of her songs, Poker Face. What are some of
but dramatic readings of them?
Paparazzi.
Yeah. My,
yeah.
Poker Face.
Yeah, exactly.
Eddie Vedder's stretch, what'd you think?
Oh, aside from the win last night, one of the emotional highlights of the game. He was great. He was articulate before he spoke. He sang great. And the fact that they did it with Harry Carey.
Yeah, it was cool.
I thought was so cool. And he was on key and harmonized at the same time. We've got a little of that. I liked his words at the beginning of the whole thing, too.
Wrigleyville is full. It's October 30th, and there's baseball at Wrigley Field for the first time in history. I know we want to thank Theo and Tom and Joe and the team for bringing the World Series to Wrigley Field 2016. And there's one guy in particular I want to sing my for, and he's number three. He's behind the plate. He may retire, but he'll never quit. Mr. David Ross, I'd like to belt this one out for you. It's his last game at Wrigley. Let's sing it for him. Let's sing it with Harry.
Was so cool last night when you realized what he was doing, singing along with the recording of Harry and seeing the tape of Harry, you know, back up in the broadcast booth, leaning halfway out of the booth. Really, really emotional. Really, really, really nice.
Yeah, the thing is, you've got to. I mean, you've done the stretch. I've done the stretch. It's not easy. And I've done it. I did it a couple of times, and you can barely hear Gary Pressey's organ when there's a bunch of people playing. And he's trying to sing it and stay in rhythm with Harry on tape.
I thought it was really well done. It was cool.
Yeah, did a really nice job. And really, I got to say a shout out to Vince Vaughn the other night. Also difficult. Going up there and you know, like trying to rally the crowd when I think they were losing 7-1 at that point.
And they're right after a 3-run home run.
Right, right. And Vince is like, hey, okay, come on. Let's. So I felt for him.
That's something they should keep a drunken kid rock in a box that they could just take out at times like that.
Exactly.
And celebrity tweets as well that we may have missed.
Bob Newhart said, I've been a Cubs fan for 80 years. One thing I know is you never give up on the Cubs. And he posted a picture of himself holding up his W flag like he's done throughout all the playoff games. Jeff Garland, Amy Schumer, they were at the game last night, actually. They posted a picture. Lance Briggs posted a tweet. Everybody going nuts for the home run for Chapman last night. A lot of people posting some great stuff on there.
So. Last word to you on Mr. DiCastro. Anything you want to say?
Yeah, just sad that he's leaving. For us, I'm sad. I'm delighted for him that he's moving on to some new exciting challenges. And how do we say thank you to somebody who has done so much for all of us personally, all of us professionally. But the thing that I keep coming back to, as a lifelong Chicagoan and as somebody who grew up with WGN, we talk about how the Cubs are in the DNA of WGN. WGN is in the DNA of Chicago.
Yep.
It's truly a part of Chicago. And for a while, at jeopardy of losing that, except for the dedication and the hard work of Jimmy DiCastro, who understood that and cared and made WGN mean something. So as a Chicagoan, I say thank you. As a friend, I say thank you. As a professional, nobody better. I don't think I've worked for anybody better. So I wish him all the best and say thank you to him.
Well said. Thank you, buddy. Talk to you later.
See you.
And back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
8:44 now. Before we get to the reason for the theme and our guest, I want to remind you our Halloween Flintstones, talking about TV here, our Flintstone costume cavalcade of photos. It's up everywhere. On social media, on Twitter at Cochran Show, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook, at WGNRadio.com, on the app, probably right in your own house. You just look at your own photos, and we'll show up there as well. But you can see the full gallery of our ridiculous Flintstone outfits. All right? So that's exciting for you. Jamie Farr is, he is a television icon. And for years and years and years and years and years, donated a ton of his time to a very charitable golf tournament in Toledo. And is just a flat-out good guy who happens to have a wife from Danville, I believe, and joins us now.
Steve, I was going to mention that. You, how did you find out?
Well, I have people. I have people who know things. And nice to talk to you again. It's been forever.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I tell you, Chicago is, without a doubt, my wife and I's favorite city. We love it. I played there some years back at the Apollo Theater. I did Lend Me a Tenor there. As a kid in Toledo, we used to visit my aunt and uncle and cousins. They lived on Southern California Boulevard in the Chicago area there. And my cousin grew up, became a policeman, and his city was Cicero, of all places. And I have his, he retired, and I have his billy club here. We have it here in my house. And I love your broadcast museum there. It's one of the best.
Well, good for you. Well, it's awfully nice.
I was your grand marshal for 1 year when they lighted Michigan Avenue at for the holiday season.
For
Buckingham Fountain and, I remember Eli's Steakhouse and the Eli's Cheesecake and Marshall Fields. And it's just a great city, wonderful city. And I grew up listening to a lot of programs on WGN.
Well, when I moved away for the first time, first move-away radio show, I grew up in upstate New York long before I came to Chicago, and I go to Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm there a month. And then a week after I get there, they go, the MASH finale is coming up, and we want to do a viewer watch party kind of thing. And this for you kids, Dave, you'll back me up on this. 1983, February, this is the end of the three-channel universe, but we're not full-blown cable yet. So this is going to get a big number. But little did we know. A number so big, Jamie Farr, it affected New York City plumbing.
That's right. I tell that story. Beside the Nielsen rating that we got, they checked the water levels of the city because during the commercials, people would run to the bathroom. That was our highest. We had a higher rating there than we did with the Nielsens.
Well, it was called
anyway,
Good.
MeTV is going to present that starting tonight, best of by far, 10 episodes out of a couple hundred, and it was hard for me to pick these. But they have kind of a personal story, a backstory for me. For example, the first one that I did, which is going to be played tonight, which is the episode where they introduced Klinger. And I had like about four or five lines in the thing. Came on for the one day, making $250 for the day. And I could use the money because I had our first baby, and I needed money to pay the rent and put food on the table. And I came on the show, and I made such a impact, apparently, that they had me back for six more shows. And then the second year, I did 12 shows. And then in the third year, I was finally put under contract.
Yeah, so there you go. And suddenly it's 11 years later, and it's 11 years later, and it's the biggest series of all time. When you auditioned for it in those first episodes and stuff, was it Klinger's desperate to get out? He's going to wear a dress, or did they add that?
No, what happened was I didn't even know that the character I was going to play. A buddy and I were trying to create some shows. We were, you know, as they say, one day you're eating the chicken, the next day you were plucking the feathers. So I was plucking the feathers at that time. And I got a call from my agent. They said, Gene Reynolds, who's the producer of the show, wants you to come down to 20th Century Fox. There's a new TV show. It's based on the movie that was done called MASH. Well, I hadn't even seen the movie. I didn't know what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's the part? He says, well, they'll tell you when you get there. They said they're going to pay you $250 for the day. I said, oh, wow, I'll be right there. So I showed up at Fox Studios. They put me into this trailer, and I saw this woman's army uniform hanging up with these huge, gigantic high heels. And I thought I was dressing with an actress. He says, no, those are yours. Put them on. I said, what the heck kind of part is this? So I put them on. And, of course, I had the hairy bow legs, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, hot look.
Stage 9. And everybody started laughing at the thing. I didn't even see the script. I didn't even know what I was going to be saying. And I had no idea. All I knew was there was a guy in a dress. And the general who sees me says, oh, still trying to get out of the Army. I said, yes, yes. I had no connection. I didn't know where any backstory of this character whatsoever. And then finally they kept adding, you know, other things to it. So I began to put somebody together as to who this person was. So as I said, I was very, very fortunate to come on for that one day and stay for 11 years.
Andre, do you even remember the last episode?
Yeah, I remember.
You were a little kid.
I remember we were waiting. Most watched episode, obviously, yeah. Finale of all time. But we were waiting. And I remember my mom, not crying, you know, just bawling, but tearing up a little
sure.
bit.
There was a lot of crying.
I mean, because that's the end of an era. Yeah,
this is Andrea I'm talking to.
Yeah, right? Hey, Jamie.
Yeah, Andrea, you know, if you talk to people that did see that last show, they will remember exactly where they were.
Yeah.
And can tell you the storyline. And incidentally, MeTV is going to show that episode on Veterans Day, November the 11th.
How cool is
so,
that?
So if young people haven't seen it, they should see it. It's a wonderfully written show. I think the writers were just terrific in how they put the finale together. And the ending scene, I don't want to give it away, but what BJ, Mike Farrell's character, does to say, finally say goodbye to Alan Alda's character, Hawkeye, was creatively done. It's just wonderful the way he did it.
And your cast, too. I mean, Loretta, Mike Farrell, Harry Morgan, Alan Alda, you obviously, everybody went on to do huge things, bigger things, too. But what chemistry? I mean, even
you know,
off
you're
and on
screen. Right. I always say the most important thing when you put a TV show together or a movie together is the casting. When those characters have a relationship, you can almost come up with any storyline and accept it. The characters more or less write the episode for you once you get it. And casting has always been important.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Jamie.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What I was just going to say, what's funny is everybody talks about the 50s being the golden age of TV. I would argue the 70s were. The 70s
were. Well, the 50s and the 70s, you're absolutely right, Steve, yeah. The 70s, no question about it. Mary Tyler Moore, All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Good Times, The Bob Newhart Show, The Carol Burnett Show. Actually, that Saturday night lineup on CBS that we were talking about was the greatest night in the history of television. And again, I don't know if I have the schedule correct, but it was All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, The Bob Newhart Show, and The Carol Burnett Show.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, biggest night in the history of television.
And people backed out the door. The Best of Far on MeTV starts tonight, runs through the final episode, right?
Yes. Well, November the 11th, they'll show the final episode. To pick out 10 shows out of the several hundred was really quite difficult. I picked these shows. These are not necessarily the greatest written shows, or somebody else may have a different opinion, but there were stories, backstories for me that I picked these particular episodes because they had some kind of personal meaning to me.
And the thing I loved about the way the writers wrote your character is they start with this hook that he's a guy that wants to get out of the army and he's willing to wear a dress to do it. And they deepened it really quickly, which is a testament to how much you meant to the show, because when Radar would call incoming, Klinger was the first guy there. When somebody needed a hand, Klinger was the first guy there. There were a couple episodes where you had these, you know, really meaningful speeches that kind of came out of nowhere that just showed, you know, that Klinger was a multifaceted actual human being and not just a guy with a gimmick.
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, in one of the episodes, and the writers would listen to us when we do the readings around the table, I had guard duty. I was wearing the dress and had guard duty, and he supposedly falls asleep, and something happens, and I objected to it. I said, you know what? Klinger would never do that. Once you give him an assignment, he would carry it out. Yeah. He would never jeopardize, you know, the other. And they said, you're absolutely right. So I said, have him something that distracts him and that he takes away so that the thing can happen, but not have him fall asleep. And they agreed with that. You know, and some of the great lines that he had. And they also, you know, one time he tried to get out. He went up to Colonel Potter and told him that he was he didn't belong in the U.S. Army because he was a communist. And Harry Morgan's character says, Bolshevik? And my answer is, no, honest, sir.
Because you can write around it without having to say it.
I laugh at it, you know, when I hear some of the things that they did in the show.
Hey, before I let you go, and again, it's MeTV. Check it out. Make sure you don't miss any. But the Toledo Mudhens may be the greatest logo in baseball.
Some of my golf outings here in Los Angeles, you know, and I say, hey, guys, get out of the water. You got to be at spring training back in Toledo. Yeah, they're swamp birds.
Yeah, and they're just it's a great, great, great logo. One of the best, if not the best, in baseball. But, you know, we're all excited, obviously. About the Cubs.
I know, yeah. You know what? I followed the Cubs since I was a kid. I love the Chicago Cubs. And, of course, I come from Toledo. So, you know, I guess I can't lose. I got the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs, two of my favorite teams.
Yep.
They're both absolutely wonderful teams, and they're favorites for everybody. I think this is a great World Series, in my opinion.
Yeah, and headed back to Cleveland. Well, thanks for all the entertainment through the years. I look forward to seeing MeTV, and you're always welcome on WGN.
And of course, Danville, Illinois. That's a favorite.
There
Dick Van Dyke, Jerry Van Dyke, Gene Hackman, Bobby Short, and Donald O'Connor.
Yeah, how about that?
Danville, Illinois.
How about that? How about that? Yeah, that great point. All right, thanks, Bill. It's Jamie Farr, MeTV, and the final episode of MASH will air on MeTV on Veterans Day. But starting tonight on MeTV, the best by far, F-A-R-R, the best by far week-long collection of his favorite episodes.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
11 minutes after 9 in the morning, Steve Cochran Show number 766. It's Halloween, in case you missed it. At Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. And look at the cat dragged in. It's my old pal Kev, Kevin Matthews, live on the phone.
Hello.
Steve Cochran
Hello. Show. Hang on. Let me turn my radio down. Look at the cat.
You know, out of all the people that should know, turn your radio down.
Hello, buddy.
Hey, now. Oh, man.
How have you...
I was so embarrassed. I was listening, and I didn't turn my radio down. And you go, oh, God. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Now, how have you been since we left the loop in 1998? And don't leave a single thing out.
I'm alive.
That's good.
I made it. I went to the light. I went to the light, and I made it. I broke through.
There is a light.
Yeah, there is a light. Good, Steve.
Well, it's
really good.
I haven't seen you in about a year. You occasionally make your way over to the tower. We run into each other, and now,
yeah.
One of the main reasons you were coming by is to see our old boss Jimmy DeCastro, and the feds finally caught up with him, and we're throwing him out.
You know, there is no way he's going to retire.
No, of course not, at all.
And I just really want to find out what he's doing next. He's a trendsetter. I absolutely adore and am so grateful for Jimmy and what he's done for me and my career. He's responsible for me coming to Chicago, signing the deal.
I remember now. Do I remember the timeline right? Because I think I followed you to St. Louis. Weren't you in St. Louis with Rick Rumble, yeah, and then you came to Chicago?
I couldn't get out of St. Louis fast enough, and you came in. And you replaced me, I believe, with Rick, and
yep.
I was able to come up to Chicago, and you know that's history. I wanted to go back to Michigan, but Greg Salk kept calling and, hey, we want you to come up here, and I did. I went to the Hancock Building and met Jimmy DeCastro. Jimmy actually made it so attractive to go from St. Louis to Chicago. He got his first class airfare.
Yeah,
from St. Louis to Chicago.
Sure.
This is my wife and I. I mean, I was eligible for food stamps. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, and Jimmy just he did it right.
Well,
and
the thing is, have you ever met anyone in this business that has a better understanding or more respect for the people on the air, the talent, as we call ourselves, than DeCastro? Because I have not.
Right. No, I swear to you. It was like I can remember sitting in his office. It's almost as there he went into his refrigerator and pulled out a really nice sandwich, and I was so hungry I was just eating it, not just nodding my head. And he's, hey, we'll put you on, right? Yeah, yeah. Can I have more? Can I have more? And he just offered me things I never had in my life.
The food.
By the way, he's going to need all food. That back.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants all of it back.
The chain that was around my neck, he loosened that, and it was just that day I'll never forget.
You know, there was a point, and I was only around the loop for a couple of years at the end, so I missed primetime loop. Caught some of it, but there was a point at the end where you'd be wandering around the hallways, Larry Wirt, who runs this company, be wandering around the hallways, and then Hurricane Jimmy would walk through, and everybody'd brighten up and everybody'd smile. And maybe he'd get you, maybe he'd get Jim Shorts, but those were good days.
Those were outstanding days. And, you know, the whole culture at that time, you know, you had Royco, you had, think of the advertising world in Chicago,
sure.
The Bulls, you had the Bears just won the Super Bowl or whatever. It was just a great time to be in Chicago.
You know, all the entertainment that Kevin Matthews gave you guys through the years, and now there's a book out that I really want people to see, and I don't know if I ever say this, but get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. Why do you call this Broken Mary?
A lot happened, Steve. I mean, I'm so blessed, honestly. I've got a great family and whatnot. In 2008, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Right.
That really changed my whole life. And in 2011, I'd gone through a ton of treatment, out of radio, ups and downs. In 2011, I was going to go and I was going to get my wife some flowers because she'd gone through so much with me. And I walked out of my truck and I'm walking to the door and I look over by the dumpster and I see this statue of the Virgin Mary and somebody had thrown her out and she's broken in half. Her hands are missing. She's covered in garbage. And I just really related to that. And the story is about putting that statue back together and how many lives are being touched by that statue
all over the world.
And you can love your wife and daughter, but not fully understand them until you understand who they are as people and what that gender goes through, right?
You bet. And it is that whole thing. It's about my life. It's about radio ups and downs. And anybody that is going through any kind of hardship, I love the message of this book. And I'm actually going to be in LaGrange at Anderson Bookshop November 20th at 2:00 signing. If anybody wants to come out.
Come out and meet Kev. Come out, you Kev heads. Get out there. Line up.
But, hey, you know what, Steve? Honestly, you know, our paths crossed a long time ago.
That's right.
And Jimmy DeCastro literally is I'm sad today's his last day because radio needs an ally like Jimmy DeCastro. He definitely cultivated, radio, and he's so responsible for me.
Well, you think of all the great talent of the last generation that's been on the air in Chicago and come through Chicago, and how much of it is directly related to Jimmy and to Larry and and really the right deal. And you're a perfect example of this. Hire a guy like Kevin Matthews, you can't really put in a box, and get out of his way and just enjoy it.
Yeah. And what Jimmy taught me is it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fall down and get back up. You know, I mean, you and I, we were constantly doing things we'd never done before. And Jimmy allowed us all the time in the world to nurture something.
That's exactly right.
And that is so rare.
That's exactly right. You know, I was thinking of you about a year ago. I got so addicted to the Eagles documentary. I was watching it every time it was on. And it's 3 hours, man. It's a commitment. And I watched it over and over again. And every time I saw Joe Walsh, and I remember Joe Walsh wouldn't come to Chicago without hanging out with Kev. He'd plan trips to come to Chicago to hang out with Kev. And to see how good he's doing, and that was a big part of those Loop days, too.
Yeah, the heritage, and yeah, you bet. I mean, I just saw a picture of Joe Walsh with a Loop cap on 2 nights ago.
How about that?
And I just smiled. You know, I mean, Joe is doing so well, and God bless him.
Well, how are you doing physically? I mean, you mentioned the MS. Obviously, you're taking care of yourself. I mean, what's the day-to-day? Is good days, bad days?
Yeah, there's good days, there's bad days, but honestly, I know this sounds cliche. I'm so lucky. There are so many people that have so much. It's you know, they're fighting a bigger fight. And I've got great doctors. I do a lot of volunteer work. I meet Kev heads that are diagnosed. Steve, one person in your audience this week is going to be diagnosed with MS.
How about that?
You know, and I just go out and somebody, it's not a death sentence. Go out and just talk to people. Hey, this is what you can do. This is what you expect. And it's good. You know, it's good to touch people in a good way.
Pay it forward. How's that musician son of yours?
Hey, he's on the road right now. He's playing with Dawes, which is an outstanding band. And they were just on the Prairie Home Companion Saturday. Seriously. That show is changing, man. I mean, they are going after millennials.
Is that right?
It's really cool. And then he was in New York last night, and now he's over in Europe.
Wow.
With Dawes. And, yeah, he's doing real good.
And your daughter?
Good. My daughter has got three little babies, and she's out in Colorado. It's great, Steve. You know, and my wife is an angel.
Fabulous.
All is good.
Yeah, you've been over your skis for years in that department.
Way over my skis.
Yeah, I got my first grandkid as well, my little granddaughter, Abigail Grace, who was in here stealing the show the other day. So we are blessed. Yeah. We're all blessed. And we're blessed to have worked for Jimmy DeCastro. And by the way, he may be listening now. He's going to come in here in a few minutes. But we plan on working for him again, Jimmy. So keep those options open.
There's no question about it, man. He's a great, great human being.
Are you still doing the podcast thing with Dahl?
Yep, still doing that every Friday. And
you can plug it. Where do people get it?
You can get it at Dahl.com.
Okay.
And Steve was kind enough to reach out 3 years ago, and I do one a week. And it's nice to, you know, just say hi to everybody weekly.
Yeah, no kidding. And keeps you in the game. It's the great Kevin Matthews, who you can meet and get your own copy, a signed copy of Broken Mary. When's that going to be again?
That is going to be Sunday, 2:00, November 20th, in LaGrange at Anderson's Bookshop.
All right, buddy. You sound great. I'll give DeCastro a hug for you, and I'll talk to you later.
Please do. God bless you. I love you, Chicago. Go Cubs.
All right, see you, man. That's Kevin Matthews, one of the great Chicago radio talents of all time. It is 9:22. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
She gets a subpoena, and she deletes and bleaches, and nobody even ever heard of bleaching. Did anybody ever hear of bleaching? You know why? It's such an expensive process. But it makes them go away. But I have a feeling they've just found a lot of them, don't you think? Have a feeling. Uma. They just found a lot of them. We never thought we were going to say thank you to Anthony Weiner.
The remarkable thing is Trump doesn't even understand the story. Nor does he make the effort to try to understand the story. Hillary Clinton continues to stumble her way to the White House. Whether or not it turns out to be a four-year term or a four-year sentence remains to be seen. But over the weekend, in case you missed it, and I doubt you could have, Friday, FBI Director James Comey made a public statement that he had sent a letter to Republican members of Congress in leadership roles, saying that they had to take another look at the Hillary Clinton emails and their classifications, their designations, and their destinations, because some had shown up in an ancillary investigation that she had nothing to do with. That investigation turned out to be of Anthony Weiner. Yes, the little pervert that could is now on the verge of making Trump competitive again. Hillary Clinton, talking about James Comey's letter, had this to say.
We've heard these rumors. We don't know what to believe, and I'm sure there will be even more rumors. That's why it is incumbent upon the FBI to tell us what they're talking about, Jeff, because right now your guess is as good as mine, and I don't think that's good enough. So we've made it very clear that if they're going to be sending this kind of letter only going originally to Republican members of the House, that they need to share whatever facts they claim to have with the American people. And that's what I expect to happen.
There's nothing wrong with that request. That's a perfectly appropriate thing for her to say, and absolutely what she could be requesting. Her surrogates and her campaign manager going around saying Comey has gone over the line, Comey may have broken the law, Comey's done this, Comey's done that, is ridiculous. You can't have it both ways. A month ago, you can't say Comey's a great guy because he said there's no prosecution here, and now say he's in the tank for the Republicans and for Trump. It can't work both ways. It's the exact reverse of where Trump was a month ago. A month ago, Trump said Comey's a criminal. Now Comey's a hero. Now Anthony Weiner's a hero. This is why you guys hate politics. So what has Hillary said to Huma Abedin, and how has she helped herself in this? Again, reminder, for those of you not clear on this, Huma Abedin is the estranged wife of Anthony Weiner. Anthony Weiner, on a computer, an investigation into whether he was sexting teenagers. This is where the potential connection to Hillary's classified emails may or may not be an issue again. So Chuck Todd on Meet the Press was talking to Robbie Mook, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and this is what he said.
Do you know all the facts? Are you 100% certain you know all of what these emails are, that you know everything in this, that you've, have you seen any of these emails?
I'm glad you asked this question. We don't know all the facts because the FBI has said basically nothing in this letter. We don't know whose emails they're talking about. We don't know how many. And according to Yahoo News, Director Comey doesn't know either. He hasn't seen the information. He decided to put out a letter to Congress without any information whatsoever. And I think that's why criticism is coming in from Democratic and Republican officials.
Are you confident that Huma Abedin has been 100% forthcoming to you and Secretary Clinton?
The Justice Department confirmed that she was totally cooperative. All of the summaries of the interviews that she gave are out there in the public. She has cooperated fully.
I understand and that you said that via the Justice. I'm talking about you and the campaign. Do you feel as if she is, you feel like you have all the facts? You, Robbie Mook.
I absolutely feel I have all the facts.
There was nothing in that conversation that indicated that Hillary Clinton had cleared the air with Huma Abedin behind closed doors. And this is, again, where she continues to be her own worst enemy.
when this broke on Friday, the same way the news on Thursday was about the foundation. You announce you're shutting the foundation down as soon as the election happens. And Friday, you announce that Huma Abedin's off the campaign. Just take a proactive response. Don't let people make up their own stories. See, I understand why people are concerned. She had a computer that Anthony Weiner had access to. So for the sake of clarity and an attempt at transparency, she's no longer with me until further notice. You get elected, bring her back.
Yeah, well, she did take the right step in saying she wants transparency. That was the first time I'd heard her say, you know what? Just look at whatever you want, but release the info.
Right, but what about
Huma? Everybody would agree with.
Huma's got to be thrown to the curb for a week and a half.
Forever.
Well, maybe forever.
Take that step and say, you know what?
But for at least for the short term until the election, you have to say she's no longer a part of this operation. Hillary Clinton, continuing. It's the hot potato election. I said it the other day. You get elected. No, you get elected. You're going to be president. No, you're going to be president. Hold on, America. We got a week to go. It's 9:31. Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
How do I say goodbye to what we had?
Tough to get boys to men at this hour.
Sing it, honey. Sing it. Come on, Steve. Let's hit the high notes. I thought you were going to come as Prince this year, not Fred Flintstone.
It was a toss-up, you know me. Jiminy Castro's here. Told this story before, but 3.5 years ago, on a cold March day, you called. You said, hey, you're always calling me to have lunch. I'm calling you. Let's have lunch. We met at a hotel out in Rosemont.
I thought we weren't telling anybody that.
Did you get a room?
Yeah. Yes. No. Well, we got a restaurant is what we got. And you told me about a plan that you were considering coming back to radio, something you had conquered previously, and that you were considering coming back to run WGN. At the time, I was in exile, and you said, would you be interested in coming back in some form? And we talked about it. And because I'm a genius, I tried to talk you out of it. I said, you really want to come back and talk to salespeople about whether or not they can give something away and promotions and things? Everything you've done, all you've done, you don't want any part of this. Thank God you didn't listen to me.
Yeah, well, thank you. Larry said the same thing, and I said, Larry, because Larry was at the time at NBC.
Yeah, Larry Wirt.
And he was talking about coming over here to do it, and I told him the same thing. So, you know, smart men think the same way. You know, we just said, Larry, don't go do that.
Right.
And then he did it, and then he trapped me back in like the mafia.
So dumb rolls uphill? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so there's not nearly enough time. Off the air, we've said plenty, but there's not nearly enough time on the air to say thank you for agreeing to come back and literally saving this place. This place is more than just a radio station. It's an institution. It's part of the fabric of Chicago, and it matters to this city. And one of the reasons that I left in 2010 was that I was fired. The other reason was because in leaving, I couldn't tolerate what was happening to this place. What you did in coming back and assembling the team you put together and the support you've shown for everybody is you breathe life back into this place. You breathe revenue back into this place. Good times. We're going to miss you like crazy, but I couldn't be more thrilled as your friend that you're going to go off and conquer another world.
Well, that's sweet to say, Stephen. as Alexander Hamilton once made a quote, it was, and I'm fitting because I'm in the Alexander
He's literally
Hamilton,
in a costume. So
I really should wrap this, but I'm not going to wrap it because of WGN and too much respect.
You want to be in the room where it happened.
What he actually said before he died in the duel, which is what I might go off to.
Spoiler alert.
Not in the show, don't worry. I'm talking in real life. What he said was, sometimes words are not big enough to express a feeling that you may have, because they just come out of your mouth and they say something. And that's the way I would describe WGN. WGN is that kind of unique place that you can't say it's like any other station.
That's true.
Certainly it's not like The Loop and some of the other experiences we've all had together,
right?
But it is such an amazing place, and to walk in these hallways and to see the youth and the light and the elements and the incredible creativity that's going on, not just on this microphone, but in podcasts and video. And there's too many people to name, but I have to say thank you to Larry Wirt, because Larry was the one that said, why don't you come back and help me? And he's been my partner and my wingman and my brother for all these years. And Steve, you know how helpful you've been, and Todd and Jeff and Jackie and all the morning show, which is such an incredible element. and Stephanie with Todd and the sales department. It's been amazing. And as I said, the youth and the strength and the notes. I came in and saw Kathy and Judy, and I saw Lou, and hear Orion. And as we started from the very beginning, to honor our legends, but to make us better every single day. And that's what our listeners make us do.
And that for you guys, for Dave and Andrea, who are two of the people who were here on the dark side of the moon and doing great work every day.
Tremendous.
They give you guys an opportunity to thrive in a newly reinvigorated creative environment from the smartest guy that's ever been involved in radio. I mean, that's pretty great.
No, he's not here, but... So now I'm going to go on, and I'm going to take the lead role in Hamilton the Musical. So if anybody's bought tickets...
You know what's funny?
If anyone's bought tickets starting in January, you might want to sell them faster than a Cubs Game 7 ticket. Right. Because
well, hold on a second, Midas, because everybody that stops me that has heard that you were doing something else wants to know what you're doing. And I know you've got a couple of things that you're looking at, and you can do anything you want, including rolling around in hundreds and giggling. But you're still going to be in touch with this place. You're still going to be
intimately involved. You can't. Place can't leave your blood. It's in your DNA, like we say of the Cubs, right, David?
Yeah, absolutely.
And of the Cats. And how about the win for the Hawks last night? Way to get on.
This is where Jimmy tries to divert because he gets uncomfortable.
Way to get on.
Just talking
about
it. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be around, and I'm going to be in your hair like you're in my hair today. How lovely it is.
Literally.
For years to come, we're going to build digital, and we're going to do lots of content together with not all of you in the morning show. Certainly, but with Ro and Anna and everybody, Bill and Wendy. I mean, I'm really looking forward to doing exciting things with Larry.
What will you miss about this place?
Stephanie Menendez. She's right here trying to shoot a picture of me. Get that camera out of here. The people. The smiles and the people. And you walk in these hallways, and there isn't a day that we're not. I mean, we hack around all the time. True or false?
Yeah, there's very little work
always
that gets done.
Giggling. It's hard to look at Dave in a Red Riding Hood and be serious.
Okay. I knew that was going to come
hard
up here.
To look at me in a full-on Hamilton thing.
Right. Yeah. May I just say that I knew things were going to be different around here 3 years ago today the president and general manager ordered me to wear and provided me with a little Red Riding Hood outfit because I had lost the football pool. And it happened to be Halloween.
It wasn't exactly Tribune corporate behavior, was it?
And I was dressed as Cap because I had just left his closet, if you recall. And I was balder than Steve Cochran on a good summer golf day.
With a bright yellow blazer.
It was orange.
Oh, yeah, orange, yeah.
But anyway, thank you to all the people that have touched my heart here. Thank you to all the listeners. I will see you at many, many remote broadcasts and events, and thank you to everybody associated with WGN Radio. It is the most special place. God bless, and thank you so much.
Love you, buddy.
Love you.
9:50.
We're out.
Let's take a break, come back, and bring in, I think, Wendy. Is Wendy back today? Oh, put that anywhere, Hamilton. We're back. We're back with Bill And coming up on 720 WGN. I was there live last night. Got a little Cubs on the TV while we were watching the Blackhawks, and I think their best performance of the year. Here's your Blackhawks Express from Four Seasons Heating, Cooling, Air Conditioning, and all the other things they do.
Now Taves, top of the right circle, comes in on goal. He scores! The captain, Jonathan Taves, with his first goal of the season. It's a power play marker, and the Hawks lead the Kings 1-0. Campbell at the right point put the puck down behind the King net. Nisimov did well to pry it free from a King. DeHulsa along the right board. Stepanera, DeHulsa closing in, put it to the side of the net. Nisimov shoots, he scores! It was a beautiful feed by Hulsa. Everybody in the building thought Marion was going to take the shot, but he put it beside the net, and Nisimov handled it clumsily for a second, got it back, and worked it past Budaj. It's 2-0 Hawks. Well, Clifford with a turnover in front, shoots Crawford with a sprawling save. Duncan Key steps out behind the Hawk net with the puck. He passes on the left wing to Tate. Moves it in over the King line. Down the left wing, fires to the empty net. Save! Rebound, score! It hit the post, and Marion Hulsa grabs the puck and fires it into the empty King net. That hit the referee and ricocheted out in front of Hulsa. It was a crazy sequence of plays. And for Corey Crawford, that's career shutout number 20 as the Blackhawks beat the LA Kings here tonight 3-0.
And again, thank you to Four Seasons. A couple of texters on the DeCastro drive-by. If Jimmy DeCastro leaves, how do we know the bad people won't come back? Well, one of them can't, and the others aren't welcome in the tower. I think we're going to be okay, but the best way to assure that is that you continue to support what we do and tell us when you don't like it and what we need to correct and fix. And we always hear from you guys, and thank you for that. And then a 630 texter, make sure you're riding the cough button. That guest you had on is known to cuss. Yeah, we were on it. Remember last time?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But we will miss Mr. DeCastro. Jimmy, Deacon, love you. Thanks for, you know, I didn't say it on the air. I should say it. Thanks for letting us work here. We're back with Bill flying solo today on 720 WGN.